You are listening to an ADIS Journal podcast.
Hi, I'm Gloria Caboni. I'm a hematologist at Vallebron Hospital in Barcelona, Spain. And I'm joined by my colleague, Dr. Maria Perez, who works at El Hospital Regional de Málaga in Spain as well. It's sunny down there. And we'll be talking about optimizing real-world outcomes in high-risk relapsed refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma patients with CAR T-cell therapy. So this would be the subject of our podcast today. So just as a brief introduction, CAR T-cell therapy has shown really good results for patients with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, even those within a high-risk subset with high-grade B-cell lymphoma as well that have not responded to previous lines of immunochemotherapy. However, this therapy is associated with a unique safety profile that requires an established treatment approach. Management of the associated adverse events, including cytokine release syndrome, or CRS, and neurologic events, also called ICANS, or immune effector cell-associated neurotoxicity syndrome, is important to maintain the benefits of this type of therapy. So let's go into our case report on a patient with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma and take us through all the stages of this type of therapy. Here we'll present our patient case. So in January of 2005, the patient was diagnosed with atypical CLL. So just to clarify, atypical CLL was based on the morphological and immunophenotypical findings in the laboratory. And this patient was treated with two cycles of oral FC before ceasing this treatment due to skin toxicity. So he was observed after that, and then again in 2007, experienced progression of the CLL and received second-line treatment for this disease entity with alemtuzumab. He also underwent splenectomy, which confirmed the atypical CLL diagnosis we knew from the beginning. In January of 2018, so then jumping ahead a few years, the patient was diagnosed with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, non-germinal center, stage 4A, with bone marrow infiltration. A clonality analysis, which of course is very important with this prior medical history, was performed, and it gave a negative result. So we did not consider this a Richter's transformation. We considered it DLBCL de novo. For the diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, this patient received the first-line treatment in March 2018 of R-CHOP for 6 cycles. The end of treatment PET scan showed a complete remission. And unfortunately, soon after finishing his 6 cycles of R-CHOP in December of 2018, he experienced a first relapse. So the patient required second-line therapy for this diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, which in this case included R-ESHAP, which is a standard platinum-based salvage immunochemotherapy regimen, 2 cycles experiencing progressive disease. So now we are in January of 2019. He receives his first cycle of R-ESHAP, February of 2019, his second cycle, and unfortunately progresses, warranting further treatment. So at this stage, it would have been ideal to offer the patient CAR T-cell therapy, but this was just at the beginning of when CAR T-cell therapy was becoming available. This patient was treated at a referral site. So unfortunately, they proceeded with a third line of immunochemotherapy at the local referral center. This time, R-EGF, which is another immunochemotherapy regimen, 4 cycles. And as we could expect, the patient experienced, again, progressive disease. His last cycle of R-EGF was received in May of 2019. And on the progressive disease PET scan, there was extensive supra and infradiaphragmatic adenopathic involvement and potentially some bone marrow infiltration. A repeat biopsy was performed, which is important when these patients receive so many lines of therapy, just to make sure we are on the right track of the diagnosis. And again, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, and we can see some of the IHC and immunohistochemistry markers of the biopsy. So in summary, this patient had received 3 prior lines of therapy for his diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, not clonally related to the prior CLL, and had failed to respond to these 3 lines of immunochemotherapy. He did not have any reliable additional chemotherapy options and was experiencing progressive disease in need of further treatment. So this is when the patient was referred to our center in order to proceed with CAR T-cell therapy. So in June 2019, we performed leukapheresis to collect the patient's lymphocytes and start CAR T cell manufacturing. Bridging therapy, that is to say, the treatment after leukapheresis and until lymphodepleting chemotherapy, was performed with R-DMOX for 2 cycles. In July of 2019, the patient finally received his tisotinlecleucel infusion and was admitted to our ward to monitor short-term adverse events after infusion. Just to remind the audience, the PET-CT prior to lymphodepleting chemotherapy, which should always be performed if available to understand what is the disease burden just before moving forward with CAR T cell therapy, showed again supra and infradiaphragmatic involvement with several conglomerates, as we can see here, lateral cervical 28 by 25, subcarinal 37 by 27 millimeters, and potential bone marrow infiltration. After the tisotinlecleucel or tisotinlecel infusion, there were some expected short-term adverse events, which are detailed here. On day plus one, that is to say 24 hours after the tisotinlecleucel infusion, the patient experienced fever without hypotension, without hypoxia. So this is a CRS grade one, only fever. So we started the patient on broad-spectrum antibiotics. There were no microbiological isolates, and the patient did not require tislelizumab at this stage. Now, a few days later, on day plus eight post-tisotinlecleucel infusion, the patient developed ICANS grade one. As we mentioned before, ICANS is the name of neurological events in this context, and the patient had a NICE score of 7. A NICE score is when we ask the patient several questions. Maximum points are 10. If he misses some of those questions, such as, you know, where we are, the city, what is your name? Can you mention, you know, what these objects are? So we ask the patient like a mini mental exam, and if the patient fails some of those questions, then the I score drops, and that's when we can grade the ICANS. So this patient had an I score of 7, therefore an ICANS of grade 1, and in this case, the patient had upper limb tremor, he had dysmetria, and somnolence that progressed to disorientation and aphasia, which is quite typical in this context, on the next day. And finally, starting out with an ICANS grade 1, he evolved into an ICANS grade 3 with a NICE score of 2. How did we treat this ICANS? So we started treatment with steroids. This is the first line standard treatment for ICANS with dexamethasone 20 milligrams every 8 hours for 48 hours. And then once the patient had almost fully recovered, we started to gradually taper the steroids until we finally stopped them 12 days after starting them. Now, what additional exams should we perform in this context? So we performed an urgent cranial CT scan to rule out other reasons for these neurological symptoms, to perform a differential diagnosis, which is also very important. And we also performed a brain MRI, which did not show any significant alterations as the cranial CT. So both cranial CT and MRI, no significant alterations. We can use the CT quicker in an emergency setting, and the MRI was performed a few days later. We also performed an EEG, which showed encephalopathy, ruling out epileptiform activity. So it's always important to do both the CT and MRI imaging and the EEG to rule out non-convulsive seizures. So everything was in line with what we could expect. The final diagnosis was, in fact, ICANS after this differential diagnosis with these additional exams, and the patient improved considerably with steroids. Now, also notable, the patient's creatinine increased to 2 milligrams per deciliter. So he experienced some acute renal failure in the context of the CRS and the ICANS. So this is often to see an altered liver or kidney profile in the context of CRS and ICANS. But of course, other reasons for this acute renal failure should be ruled out, such as obstruction due to the lymph nodes, due to the lymphoma and tumor lysis syndrome. This resolved on its own with additional fluids. And then finally, on day plus 10, post-tisotinlecleucel infusion, the patient experienced hematopoietic recovery with a neutrophil count above 1,000. No GSF support or platelet transfusions were required for this initial recovery. And after this, the patient was discharged. 30 days post-infusion, that is to say 1 month post the CAR T cell infusion, we performed the first PET scan. And that's the standard time point to perform the first disease evaluation. We confirmed that the patient was in a complete response with a DIL score of 2 in this 1 month post-infusion PET scan. And interestingly, the patient required here, yes, G-CSF support twice weekly during 8 weeks without requiring any transfusions. So it's quite common to see this biphasic behavior of the neutrophil count kind of goes down after the lymphodepleting chemotherapy. It then recovers a few days later when we are discharging the patient from the ward. And a few days later, around the third or fourth week post-CAR T-cell infusion, it will drop again and will require some G-CSF support. That is what we call an intermittent behavior. So I think it's important to acknowledge that at this time point, we did not consider any consolidation with an autologous or an allogeneic stem cell transplant. So in the setting of CAR T-cell therapy, when it's administered in the third or later line setting and the patient has failed 2 or more prior lines of immunochemotherapy, we do not usually perform an autologous stem cell transplant after achieving a response with CAR T-cells, given that the patient is by definition chemorefractory. Now, regarding the allogeneic option, that would be considered an allogeneic stem cell transplant if the patient failed CAR T-cell therapy, required subsequent treatment lines, and achieved a complete response in fourth, fifth, sixth line of treatment with subsequent treatment after CAR T-cell failure. Then, potentially, if the patient is a candidate, we could definitely have the discussion of consolidating that response with an allogeneic stem cell transplant. In this case, the patient achieved a complete response with a DIL score of 2 with CAR T cells and no further therapy or consolidative strategies were required. Now, very interesting, 14 months post-tisocel infusion, now we jump ahead to September 2020, there was a suspected relapse due to the appearance of left laterocervical lymph nodes in the same location as before CAR T-cell therapy. And we can see that on the PET scan. We can see those left laterocervical lymph nodes. So of course, we suspected disease relapse, and very important, we performed a biopsy, even though it was quite evident on the physical exam as well. We performed a biopsy, was revealed findings compatible with necrosis, and there was no lymphoma relapse confirmation on that biopsy. So at that point, the patient was feeling well. His ECOG was 0. The labs were normal, and we decided to just perform a repeat PET scan later on. The subsequent PET scan showed spontaneous resolution of all the lymph nodes. So close follow-up was carried out. It is very important the patient did not relapse. We really do not fully understand what those lymph nodes were, but in any case, they resolved spontaneously. And the patient continued to be in a CR, both of the lymphoma and of the CLL. Additional exams were performed in that respect as well. The patient was in an MRD negative CR of the CLL and a complete resolution, complete response of the diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. 26 months post-CAR T-cell infusion, so now we are in September of 2021. The patient was followed with PET scans, as we usually do until 24 months post-infusion, maintained that complete response, as mentioned, both of the CLL and the diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. But unfortunately, 2 months later, so now we are 28 months post-CAR T-cell infusion, the patient developed anemia and was diagnosed in his referral hospital with high-risk myelodysplastic syndrome with TP53 mutations, 5q and 7q deletion. The patient was started on azacitidine, but unfortunately presented septic shock and died. So, coming to the end of the case, that's the end of the clinical information, some highlight points, some take-home messages. Patients with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, where this disease has been refractory to multiple prior lines of immunochemotherapy, we now know that treatment with CAR T-cells and among the available CAR T-cell constructs with zanlecleucel or tisocel has demonstrated manageable safety profile and the ability to achieve durable responses. So CAR T-cell therapy has curative potential in the diffuse large B-cell lymphoma setting, and this has been confirmed across the different constructs that we now have available in the commercial setting. Long-term follow-up findings from real-world studies, such as the CIBMTR registry or studies in which I also collaborated and performed with our patients in relapsed refractory aggressive non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, were consistent with a phase II pivotal JULIET study, which led to the approval of tisocel for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma in the third line or later setting. So we can see here some of the data which I will not go into, but just to reinforce that efficacy outcomes at 24 months were similar for patients who would not have been eligible for the pivotal JULIET study. So we can see here reasons for JULIET ineligibility, an ECOG performance status of 2 or higher, a disease histology which was not included in JULIET, patients who were in a comorbid state where they had, you know, several comorbidities which had rendered them ineligible for JULIET, and still we can see that efficacy outcomes are comparable across these patient populations. Studied in the standard care setting and clinical studies with tisa-cel have demonstrated largely consistent results. And I think it's important to again remember that as soon as we can offer CAR T-cell therapy to our patients, this should be offered without delay. We can do it in third line better than in fourth. So finally, in summary, CAR T-cell therapy can be effective and achieve long-lasting responses. Durable responses has curative potential in patients with high risk relapse refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. Long-term follow-up is key to watch out for late adverse events and potential lymphoma relapse. This is very important to observe both things. So late adverse events on one hand, and on the other hand, you know, always watch out for the potential of that lymphoma to relapse. Physicians should be alert to development of secondary neoplasms. This has been quite in the spotlight recently. So it's very important to follow these patients during their full lifetime in this heavily pretreated patient population. We know that risk of secondary tumors, especially T-cell neoplasms related to viral vector integration, is an emerging concern. However, you know, given what I've mentioned earlier, these events occur at a low frequency, and even in many of the times they have been reported, are not directly related to the CAR T-cells. So, you know, these patients have been exposed to multiple prior lines of immunochemotherapy, so always be cautious of, you know, associating that secondary neoplasm to the CAR T cells. It could be also related to the prior lines of immunochemotherapy that patient has received. So, as mentioned, according to FDA, very important, these patients should be monitored for their full lifetime, and frameworks have been established for defining the clonal relationship and viral vector monitoring. The other idea I wanted to highlight is that suspected relapse of the lymphoma should always be confirmed with a biopsy, even if evident. We've seen several cases of patients who had a suspected relapse because of growing or new lymph nodes, which after the biopsy showed a result different to the large B-cell lymphoma that had been previously treated. And this, of course, changed how we are going to manage these patients. So very important to always biopsy a suspected relapse, and as mentioned, watch out for the secondary neoplasms as a long-term adverse event years after CAR T-cell therapy has been administered. With this, I would like to thank my colleague Maria for preparing with me this case report, and thank you all for your attention.
You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS Journal Podcasts with your preferred podcast provider, or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements and copyright information, please visit the article page on the journal website. The link to the article page can be found in the podcast description.